Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers who are working on solutions that face our fellow individual community members, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This is George Koster, your host. This episode is part of our series exploring COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area. Back in April of 2020, when we decided to create this ongoing series on COVID-19's impact, first on nonprofits and then on small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area, we, like you, had no idea how long the pandemic would go on and what the health and economic impact would be in our community. As we enter the second half of 2022 with the latest explosion of cases from the most recent COVID-19 Omicron mutations, along with the masking requirements being changed and folks getting their vaccinations, our communities are still struggling to deal with the health, economic, mental, and societal impacts of the ongoing global pandemic. This all adds to the ongoing uncertainty of our ever-changing indoor and outdoor, vaccinated and unvaccinated protocols, and the politics of the pandemic that will drive how we all come back together as a unified or fractured community. We will continue to shine a spotlight on the nonprofits and small businesses that make up the fabric of our community, along with the founders and staff who are struggling to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on their operations, services, and sustainability until we can all get to the other side of the pandemic. Along the way, we will also share with you all the amazing solutions that our nonprofits, small businesses, foundations, and government leaders are working on to help us all get to the other side of the pandemic and come together to rebuild our communities with more economic, social, and environmental equality.
There's a couple things that we found in our reporting. I think the first one that stood out to me is, unlike some other cities, which we'll talk about later, San Francisco, the city government, is not pushing for these downtown office to housing conversions. The mayor's office is still trying to get businesses back. They're launching all of these campaigns to incentivize workers coming into the office. And when we talked to the planning department, what we found is that it's actually not going to be that difficult to make these conversions. So it's not the city's planning processes that are actually standing in the way. It feels a little bit more like a willpower problem, at least from the bureaucracy side.
This is part three of our three episodes exploring how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting San Francisco's downtown neighborhood and economy, along with the efforts to address the issues and to reinvent downtown San Francisco. As downtown San Francisco continues to struggle to come back from the pandemic, one of the ideas that is being discussed is to convert office buildings into housing to address San Francisco's decades-long affordable housing crisis. We wanted to dig deeper into this idea of converting offices into housing and explore all of the issues of making this happen in San Francisco, along with examples of other cities who've actually converted offices to housing. Our guests also tell us about the state of California's pressure on San Francisco's government to build more housing, since according to California's Department of Housing and Community Development, San Francisco is the slowest jurisdiction in the state to move housing projects to construction. In this episode, we feature the voices of two local reporters, Sarah Wright and Kevin Trong from the San Francisco Standard, who've done in-depth reporting on the office building to housing conversion efforts, along with issues facing our housing and business sectors. I'm joined remotely by the housing and transportation reporter at the San Francisco Standard, Sarah Wright, along with small business policy and economic recovery reporter at the San Francisco Standard, Kevin Trong. Welcome to Voices of the Community, Sarah and Kevin.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'd like to begin by just having each of you provide the audience a quick background on yourselves and reporters here in San Francisco and your proverbial reporting beat, which a lot of people don't realize what that is anymore, or report desk. So, Sarah, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, sure. So I report on housing and transit here in San Francisco, which basically means that I'm looking at land use and how the city is deciding where things should go and how things should work and how it affects the residents. So how you get around in your day-to-day life, things like where you live and how much it costs to do all those things.
Great. Thank you. And Kevin?
So my focus is looking at small businesses, which are the backbone of a lot of neighborhoods, a lot of cities, often the major employer in a lot of communities. What are the struggles that they're kind of going through, particularly as we look to the recovery that has happened or not happened in the last 2 years since the pandemic. And I kind of report on the business owners themselves, the folks that connect with them in the community, and the larger policymaker discussions on how to enable their success and continuing growth.
Great. Thank you. So I had both of you on the show because this is part three of our third story on downtown San Francisco. We just dropped a show a couple of weeks back with Anna Tong, who works with you guys there on taxes, and Noah Arroyo over at the San Francisco Chronicle, who's been really following all of the various, if you will, plans, ideas, designs for trying to bring back downtown. And I really wanted to have both of you share with the audience all of your wonderful reporting on the concept that I think a lot of people see vacant buildings in downtown and the whole concept of, oh, we have a housing problem. We really need more people living downtown to make it a community, etc. So I'd love to have you each provide a little background on your reporting, kind of provide some context of reporting on the whole downtown or the attempts of downtown recovery, especially within the lens of housing and business and policy. So Sarah, would you like to begin?
Yeah, sure. So Kevin and I kind of kept hearing from Mayor Breed and from lots of other folks at the city, this plea for businesses and workers to come back downtown. But no one really was making commitments and moves to have offices be full. And as a result of that, Kevin did a lot of reporting on small businesses that are suffering. I did a lot of reporting on transit ridership that wasn't coming back. And meanwhile, I'm reporting on San Francisco's housing crisis, which is ongoing, and our current need to find space to house all of our residents that live here now and our future residents. And so then we kind of, this question kept crossing our desks. We were getting tweets on social media. We were getting emails. We were getting calls from people saying, why not kill two birds with one stone? Why not use these huge empty buildings to help house people in San Francisco? And they're just basically this idea that there must be a better use for that space than sitting empty.
And Kevin?
Yeah, so I'll add one other piece, which was the fact that it was in the cultural conversation, so much so that Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos were tweeting about this issue. So if we knew that people of that sort of ilk were talking about it, we knew this was a conversation that was happening on our local community or something that we were hearing on a day-to-day basis. So that was where we kind of started our reporting from.
Thank you. Good context. And I'd like to step back a little bit further only because in pre-pandemic times, I'd love to have you kind of share with the audience a little bit of, as much as you can, the context of what downtown dynamics were, right? And still are. So Kevin, why don't you start and provide a little bit of, if you will, framing, set the table for us on what it was like pre-pandemic in downtown.
Right. So, I mean, pre-pandemic, when I worked there, especially, you had tens of thousands of people flooding in. And those issues that you mentioned were there, George, but they were papered over by that population. It was hard to kind of see the issues around homelessness, around public safety, when you had so many people walking around, you had a kind of critical mass. And the issues around high commercial rents and kind of that stuff was papered over by the really enormous economic growth that San Francisco has seen over the past decade. Prior to the pandemic, everything was up. And when COVID hit, I think it really highlighted some of those problems that were there kind of lurking underneath that surface.
Well, Sarah, why don't we segue into the findings from your reporting about the housing and transportation component?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple things that we found in our reporting. I think the first one that stood out to me is, unlike some other cities, which we'll talk about later, San Francisco, the city government, is not pushing for these downtown office to housing conversions. The mayor's office is still trying to get businesses back. They're launching all of these campaigns to incentivize workers coming into the office. And when we talked to the planning department, what we found is that it's actually not going to be that difficult to make these conversions. So it's not the city's planning processes that are actually standing in the way. It feels a little bit more like a willpower problem, at least from the bureaucracy side. So Dan Sider, who is the chief for the city's planning department, said that, you know, approvals for an office to housing conversion could take a matter of months, and some of them wouldn't even require a hearing at the planning commission. It's also a process that may be easier than normal housing building of this size, simply because the building already exists, right? And so a lot of the barriers that housing developers find in San Francisco is often community opposition to a large-scale building in a neighborhood. And that can delay the process by months, even years. But because these buildings already exist, Dan said it's possible that that step of the process would actually be a lot easier than normal. So that's not really the big barrier standing in the way. I think the biggest thing that we found with this, and I've dove deeper into since Kevin and I did this report, is the cost of making these conversions. So there haven't been any applications in downtown San Francisco for this type of housing conversion. And one of the reasons for that is because it's just so expensive to make these types of conversions. What they did tell us that at the planning department is there's a type of housing that this could work for, which here in San Francisco, we call group housing, which is like this dorm style, which does have communal spaces, which would be a better fit for this type of conversions if developers were going to go ahead with this.
Thank you. I want to step back just for a moment as well to provide the audience, if you will, some more context around housing. So most cities and counties have to come up with a housing element. And in that housing element, it calls for them telling the state what kind of housing in the build, how many units, where it's going to be built, et cetera. And now the state under Gavin Newsom is actually pressuring cities and counties, including San Francisco, which the last I had just heard was one of the slowest counties to actually build housing in the state, to actually build 80,000 units. So would you like to walk the audience through a little bit of kind of the policy, if you will, of housing and the requirements that the state is pushing on? And then, of course, what's the city's response?
Yeah, I can actually take this one because it's kind of the heart of what I've been working on, which is that, you know, San Francisco has a housing crisis here. We also have a housing affordability crisis. And so we are running up against a deadline. This coming year, the state has given the city a task. We basically have to look at all of our policies, our land use policies, our zoning policies, and we have to create a plan. And that plan has to include where and how, more or less, we're going to accommodate 82,000 new units by the year 2031. And so if you do the math, like that averages out to sort of around 10-ish thousand units per year. But our housing pipeline right now, we're only building around 3,000 units per year. So we're falling pretty far short of that goal. And it doesn't look like things are going to get better soon. And the biggest share of what we're falling short on, affordable housing specifically. And so there's a lot of questions as to why this is happening. One of the main drivers, like I mentioned earlier, is the cost to build. A lot of developers are not seeing it to be worthwhile to build here in San Francisco. But the state also suspects that our processes are getting in the way of this. So they've actually opened an investigation into San Francisco's housing permitting processes. And that's because we have uniquely long permitting times. It's the highest in the state to get a project kind of through the approval process. So I think what the planning department has told me is that they're exploring all options for new neighborhoods and areas to help hit this affordable housing goal and then just our housing goals in general.
You're listening to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the James Irvine Foundation, dedicated to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. More at irvine.org. This is George Koster, your host, and if you're just joining us, this is part three of our three episodes exploring how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting San Francisco's downtown neighborhood and economy, along with the efforts to address the issues and to reinvent downtown San Francisco. Let's get back to our conversation with San Francisco Standard reporters Sarah Wright and Kevin Truong about their reporting on converting office buildings into housing, along with examples of cities that have successfully done this and the housing and business issues facing San Francisco.
And Kevin, coming to you, you can add some more to that piece on housing. But I also, since you've been working on the whole small business climate, and we are talking about downtown, love to get your perspective on where you feel like business is 2.5 years in. We're going into the fourth quarter, which is holiday. They're trying to bring more travelers back. Just had Salesforce's largest convention that you guys reported on as well. So share with us a little bit more on both business and your take on housing.
Yeah, so I'll jump in on the housing issue. Currently, basically, San Francisco is in a bit of a standoff with the state over control over its housing destiny. And San Francisco has had quite a lot of control over its internal housing politics and policies over the last few decades. But now we're starting to see a split, and we're starting to see the state and its new sort of housing enforcement arm really come in to play. And they kind of want to make San Francisco a bit of an example, because they sort of see it as a problem child when it comes to the need to solve the housing crisis. I was at an event with Mayor Breed a little bit earlier this week, and she said, everyone knows that there's so much unnecessary drama in San Francisco to build housing. And then she took a hit at some of her political adversaries as part of that. But I mean, you can kind of see it on the ballot in November. Prop D and Prop E are basically opposing measures that are both, quote unquote, meant to streamline the production of affordable housing and sort of remove some of what Sarah was talking about in terms of discretionary review, building affordable housing units without necessarily needing to go through all the bureaucratic hurdles. And it'll be an interesting result to see what voters want, because you know, a lot of the problems with building housing in the past has sort of been led by the community. And now we're starting to sort of see a political divide in the city around that. And we're obviously seeing a political divide in the city in terms of its leadership on that question as well.
Thank you. And Sarah and Kevin, jump in on this one as well. I wanted to just turn, since we're talking about some solutions or ideas, in your reporting, you talked a little bit about the LA's adaptive reuse ordinance. So I'm not sure which of you would love to dive into that one, and then the impact of the adaptive reuse ordinance on housing production in LA, which most people think, oh, LA, it's this massive suburban, which it is, but they've done an amazing job on trying to reinvent their downtown.
Yeah, I can kind of jump in on this. So I'm actually from Southern California in LA, and my parents are also grew up there as well. And for much of their sort of life, downtown LA was kind of a dangerous place. It wasn't a place you ever really wanted to go. Now it's incredibly hip. It's vibrant. It has a lot of residential use. And part of that was a kind of concerted effort by the city leadership to pass this adaptive reuse ordinance. And what that did was basically allowed them to take advantage of some of these distressed, empty buildings and turn them into something what the city really needed, which was new housing for an increased population and citizenry. And over the two decades that that ordinance was in place, and it did a bunch of things. It relaxed some building standards, basically opening up new different building standards and things like that to actually create this next phase and hopefully, in the eyes of policymakers, continue the really amazing success that Los Angeles has had as really a poster child for these types of projects over the past two decades.
Well, and a question for both of you, do you know from your reporting and conversations with folks, is there any conversation going on with San Francisco thought leaders within housing, downtown conversions, et cetera, to the expertise, if you will, of what LA's been able to do over the last decade plus?
So San Francisco right now is really focused on what it wants to do by itself. I don't know how to put that more gracefully, but Kevin mentioned it earlier. Governor Gavin Newsom said the other day that the state is gonna start penalizing cities that aren't doing enough. And meanwhile, San Francisco's policymakers are focusing on things like fourplex legislation. The idea is to take a state law that allows for basically all single family zoning to be upzoned to allow for more units and create like a special San Francisco version of this bill. What that ends up sometimes meaning is that these state laws aren't as powerful here in San Francisco. And a lot of that has to do with legislators here wanting to maintain sort of local control over our housing policies, things like discretionary review, because they want housing development to be careful, to be planned. And I honestly, I haven't asked the folks, especially on the land use committee, about LA's policies in particular, but what I imagine they would say is, oh, but we're San Francisco and we want to do it our own way.
I want to segue back for a second. You mentioned Governor Newsom, and either one of you jump in on this question, but he's trying to put the proverbial funding where he is putting his hammer, right? So he said, hey, in our new budget, here's $100 million in seed funding to convert offices into housing. So do you want to share a little bit about what the policy is and if you feel like it's hitting any open ears in San Francisco?
Yeah, so he actually boosted that number. I think the current number tagged in the budget is $400 million. And so it's a lot of money. But you got to think he's going to probably, or the state is probably going to incentivize putting that or prioritize putting that money into places where they think are doing housing policy correctly, rather than, like I said, San Francisco being more of a problem child. So the idea would be to basically create grants to help incentivize, to remove cost barriers and help ease conversions, and particularly working on this issue of the downtown conversions.
Well, and so staying with the idea of San Francisco actually applying, and I love the fact that Sacramento is going after it, given urban sprawl, if you will. I would love to get each of your input or thoughts on, so New York, which is what you were talking about, Kevin, and you guys talked about this in your reporting, was the 421A tax abatement program. And since our last episode in part two, Noah kind of walks the audience through what I think is kind of a cascade of effect where, and you talked about a little bit as well, Kevin, where office space 25% occupied, maybe at best it's 40% or 50%. All the buildings get reassessed at lower tax basis. All the tax money that the city is living on goes away. And it seems like a tax abatement program and a adaptive reuse ordinance, those hand in hand, could really be amazing tools for San Francisco to reinvent itself. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I want to jump in a little bit because government subsidies can go far in housing. The thing I'm hearing from developers right now, though, is that a tax break on a development is not going to build it. It's not going to make the 2 + 2 = 4. And so there's, with rents staying steady or even dropping, and with just the cost of labor rising, the cost of materials rising in San Francisco, the uncertainty of even getting it built. And so it's going to take setting aside land for specifically affordable housing. It's going to take these sort of bigger sweeping efforts if the city hopes to counteract the simple market forces that are bending rent and the cost of housing a lot higher in line with every other cost we see, gas prices, everything else.
Thank you. I'd love to turn to both of you and ask, how can folks who are listening to the show get engaged in supporting efforts to convert office space to housing or build more affordable housing, help small businesses, et cetera? So, Kevin, why don't we begin with you?
Well, a lot of it is the stuff that you've heard before show up at your local city meetings, right? And get to know your local legislator, whether that is on the city level or the state level, or state legislator level or the federal level. And a lot of it is education. These things, housing development, housing taxation policy, are very complicated. But if you're able to kind of explain it to people in a way that sort of makes sense, and that's kind of what our job is, and that's why we initially set out to write this article. But if we want to make solution, want to make progress on some of these big issues, it's kind of going to need to have everybody rowing in the same direction, starting with that very basic understanding of wanting to have an affordable place to live.
Great. Thank you. And Sarah?
Yeah. So what I do is I show up to city meetings. I'm there as an observer, but there's a lot of people who aren't. And specifically the Land Use Committee, it meets every Monday at 1:30 p.m. And you can tune in remotely. And if you really want, you see something on the agenda, or you don't even see something on the agenda and you just want to talk about housing, those three members of the Board of Supervisors are there to listen to your concerns about land use. And there's also coming up on November 15th, there is a big hearing at the whole Board of Supervisors on the housing element update. So if you have a vision for what the future of San Francisco should look like, where we should be building housing, how we should be building housing, there will be time for public comment at that meeting. And it's where the city as a whole will be gathering to talk about basically the next 8 years of housing development. So reach out, and you don't know what could happen.
Thank you. It's great. And for everyone listening, we are working on an election show, an hour show that would broadcast the last Saturday and Sunday of October and the first Saturday and Sunday of November to try to do a deep dive into local and state propositions, mind numbing as that may be. So I'd love to turn to our final question for each of you. And that is, what do you feel like are some of the good things, and I know that's all relative, or positive things that have come out of the pandemic, as if you will, drive to do things like convert office to housing, to get more attention on housing issues, on business issues, et cetera. So who would like to begin?
I'll go. I live in the Richmond District in San Francisco. And as a result of the pandemic, I see Clement Street. I see my neighborhood coffee shops, my neighborhood fried chicken place, Foghorn, which is amazing. Busy. So busy. I think, yes, maybe people are not going downtown. Maybe they're not going to the office. All of my housemates work from home. And so they go out in their own neighborhood. And it's been really fun to kind of see these small downtowns throughout the city thriving and businesses doing well there, and people kind of walking around at all hours of the day. So I really enjoyed getting to know my neighborhood a lot better.
Thank you. And Kevin?
Yeah, and I think I started out this conversation by talking about how the boom times of the pre-pandemic era sort of papered over some of the challenges and the problems that the city had. And I think now we're being confronted with them. And we have a chance to really come together as a city and try to make progress on them. And I think part of that, and I talk to leaders in downtown all the time, and part of that is figuring out whatever this next chapter of downtown might be. And I don't think we'd be having those conversations without the pandemic. So if anything good can come out of that and helping build something that is a little bit more equitable, that is a little bit more fair, that is a little bit more positive and vibrant, I'm really holding out hope for that.
Thank you. So I want to thank Sarah and Kevin for sharing your wonderful reporting work on how COVID-19 pandemic is impacting downtown San Francisco and all the numerous issues and potential solutions of converting office space into housing. We'll make sure that listeners have your contact information, website, and social media, along with links to your reporting, which is always ongoing, and you guys have done an amazing job there, so they can get engaged with the issues as well as the various solutions being proposed and executed by our local government, we hope so, business and nonprofit organizations. Please stay safe and healthy as we all work our way through the latest stage of the COVID-19 pandemic and all of its variants.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voices of the housing and transportation reporter at the San Francisco Standard, Sarah Wright, along with small business policy and economic recovery reporter at the San Francisco Standard, Kevin Truong. To read Sarah Wright's reporting on housing and transportation, please go to sfstandard.com/author/Sarah-Wright. And to read Kevin Truong's reporting on both business and recovery policy, please go to sfstandard.com/author/Kevin-Truong. To hear parts one and two of our downtown San Francisco stories, please go to georgecoster.com and click on Voices of the Community and click on the COVID-19 series and listen to episode 95, which is part one that features the voices of Chris Wright from Advance SF and Jeff Bolisario from the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, and episode 98, which is part two that features the voices of Noah Arroyo from the San Francisco Chronicle and Anna Tong from the San Francisco Standard. We hope that you enjoyed the insights, points of view, and personal stories from the voices of changemakers and their nonprofits and small businesses featured in the series. To find out more and get engaged with the nonprofits, small businesses, and staff members featured in the series, please go to my website, georgecoster.com, and click on Voices of the Community to find links to the extended versions of these interviews and to listen to the entire series. After listening to these stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to provide a hand up to your fellow community members. Today's episode was made possible by the audio wizard and our associate producer, Eric Estrada, and the graphics magic of Casey Nance from Citron Studios, along with the wonderful crew at the San Francisco Public Press and KSFP. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the James Irvine Foundation, dedicated to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. More at irvine.org. Voices of the Community is a member of Intersection for the Arts, which allows us to offer you a tax deduction for your contributions. Please go to georgecoster.com and click on the donate link to make a donation to help us provide future shows just like this one. While you're on our website, you can enjoy our archived past shows, which feature community voices working on solutions to critical issues facing Northern California communities. And you can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about future shows, as well as shows and events from the organizations that are included in our episodes. Take us along on your next COVID walk by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at George Coster, and we'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas, so send us an email to george@georgecoster.com. I'm George Coster in San Francisco, and thank you for listening.